presenter is Walter Mateja. Did I get that right? Thank you. He is the Child Health Director at the State of Delaware's Health Department. He's also a doctoral student at Temple University in Health Studies.
Good morning. I'd like to thank the MCH section for the opportunity to present some of my findings here at the conference. My presentation consists of a subset of results from my dissertation study. The study's exploratory and looks at the association between maternal alcohol use in early pregnancy and congenital cardiac defects. It's exploratory in nature. There's basically two overarching questions that are in the study. The first is there an association between maternal alcohol use and early pregnancy and the likelihood of congenital cardiac defect? The second question is a more methodological one. Is there a difference in reporting between affected and non-affected control groups? When we were first fleshing out the study, my advisor suggested to me it would be a good idea to look at infants with other poor outcomes to see if there was reporting bias going on with respect to self-report of alcohol use in early pregnancy. So we looked at an affected control group consisting of infants with Down syndrome, as well as a non-affected control group with no birth defects, with the thinking being that mothers with poor outcomes could either over-report and bias the results, inflating the effect that we found for risky behaviors, or conversely, because of social stigma or other reasons, under-report and bias the results of the effect towards the null. In my study, we looked at various measures of alcohol use. We looked at any alcohol use in the 3 months prior to pregnancy is a dichotomized measure, yes or no. Binge drinking in the 3 months prior to pregnancy, being five or more drinks on one occasion. Frequent drinking, an average of seven or more drinks per week in the 3 months prior to pregnancy. And then continued drinking, reporting any drinking prior to, in the 3 months prior to pregnancy and drinking in the last 3 months of pregnancy. And the 3 months of pregnancy in the study is thought to be a rough proxy for the for early pregnancy, since many women don't recognize that they're pregnant until after conception. I have no financial relationships to disclose. And just to frame it, the study's built on three propositions. Women continue to drink and binge drink during the preconception period, that pregnancy recognition occurs after conception, and risky behaviors such as alcohol consumption often continue into this critical period, and also that early pregnancy is a crucial time for development of the cardiac system. I don't know if we have a laser pointer? Okay. Do we have a laser pointer? Oh, you can. Oh, it's on the screen. Okay, gotcha. This is just some background on the public health impact of alcohol use. These are the latest things from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health from SAMHSA. As you can see, among non-pregnant women aged 15 to 44, over half report any alcohol use in the past month. Among pregnant women, it's about 10% in the past month, and that's any time during pregnancy during the past month. For binge alcohol use, it's about a quarter of non-pregnant women. And for binge alcohol use, it's about 4% of pregnant women. SAMHSA defines heavy alcohol use as binge drinking five or more times in the past month, in the past 30 days. And then, I don't know if you can see, on this chart just points to the stability of these estimates over time, over the past 5 years or so. It's still about 11.6. This stuff just came out last month, 11.6%. Of women in 2006-2007 that were pregnant aged 15 to 44 reported alcohol use in the past month. As far as the impact, In 2005, the infant mortality rate was about 6.8 per 1,000 in the United States. About 1 in 5 of infant deaths are attributable to congenital malformations. Heart defects are the most prevalent types of birth defects, and they're estimated to occur in about 8 to 11 out of every 1,000 births, accounting for about 32,000 to 44,000 infants born annually with these defects. They also accounted in 2003 for an estimated cost of $1.4 billion in initial hospital stays, according to the CDC. And a recent American Heart Association scientific statement basically said that while alcohol is suspected of being related to cardiac defects, there's still insufficient evidence to demonstrate a causal relationship. There's been a number of previous studies that have examined the relationship of alcohol with cardiac defects, but significant associations have been rarely demonstrated. Despite this, there's biological plausibility in numerous animal studies that have been done to date. And as I said, causality is still in human populations. This study is just an example of three of the studies, case controls. I reviewed about 10 case control studies that were done from 1989 through 2004. All of them found similar odds ratios to what's reported here. There's elevated odds ratios, but none of them really approach significance, but none of them are really statistically significant. There are exceptions to this. There was a study in 1992 in Hungary which found an odds ratio of 3.5. It was a cohort study, but that was for alcohol use throughout pregnancy. And there was a study in Spain, I think, in 2004, which found that among women who self-report as alcoholic and consume very large quantities of alcohol, there's about 11.9, I think, was the odds ratio. But the confidence intervals were huge, and the N in that cell was relatively small. These are just three examples of the biological processes that are thought to contribute to heart defects. The first deals with the inhibition of cholesterol modification of the sonic hedgehog gene, which relates to the signaling process during cardiac looping when the heart's developing and resulting in heart defects. The second, alcohol contributes to decreased levels of retinoic acid, which also complicates the signaling process and results in cardiac defects. And the third is reduced blood flow, which results in reduced cardiac output and results in heart defects. All these are from animal studies. So my study questions, again, were, is there a difference in the risk of exposure among infants born with cardiac defects compared to infants affected controls born with Down syndrome and non-affected controls? Looking at alcohol use measured four ways: any alcohol use in the 3 months prior to pregnancy, binge drinking, frequent alcohol use, or drinking throughout pregnancy. The second question, is there a difference in odds ratios for exposure when using affected and non-affected control groups as reference groups? My methods were, I used a secondary analysis of the Pregnancy Risk Assessment Monitoring System, PRAMS, linked to birth certificates. It's a case two control or two comparison group design using affected controls with Down syndrome and no indication of a comorbid heart defect. Non-affected controls who were born at a gestational age of at least 37 weeks and a birth weight of at least 2,500 grams. I used complex samples, logistic regression, and SPSS to weight and analyze the data set. The data came from 8 participating PRAM states during the period 1996 to 2005. The initial data set consisted of 123,124 records that were obtained. And on the bottom, I acknowledge the states. It's Alaska, Arkansas, Colorado, Illinois, Nebraska, South Carolina, Rhode Island, and Utah. Not all states had data for the whole 10-year period, but all the states had at least 4 years of continuous data during that time period. The birth certificates were linked to the survey responses. And from the complete data set, I assigned 237 cases with congenital cardiac defects and no other birth defect indicated, 82 affected controls with Down syndrome and no other birth defect indicated, and non-affected controls were selected at a ratio of 4-to-1 controls to cases that were born at a gestational age of 37 weeks and a birth weight of at least 2,500 grams. They were selected randomly after I matched for year of birth and state of birth. Just a word on the representativeness of the data set. I looked at the National Center for Health Statistics birth certificate data for a five-year period and found that the rates of reported cardiac heart defects per 10,000 in the study states ranged from about 9.8 in Colorado to 46.8 in Rhode Island. And for Down syndrome, the rates ranged from 4.8 per 10,000 in Rhode Island to about 12.3 in Utah. The surveys that I received accounted for about 3.2% of the live births in the participating states during the years they participated in PRAMS. The cases accounted for about 4.3% of the cardiac heart defects that were reported in those states in the National Center for Health Statistics. And the Down syndrome accounted for about 3.8%. And this is unweighted, but it just goes to show it's in the ballpark of what we expected to find. The covariates I examined were age, race, ethnicity, marital status, high blood pressure, diabetes, body mass index, stress, health insurance, educational attainment, pregnancy intention, smoking in the 3 months prior to pregnancy, and previous pregnancies. This is the study sample age group distribution. Though there are some differences in distribution in these age groups, there was nothing statistically significant going on here. There was a statistically significant difference between cases and affected controls with Down syndrome, with infants more likely to be born to mothers under 18. And there was also a statistically significant difference here with infants Down's infants more likely to be born to mothers over 35. This is just a smoking distribution in the 3 months prior to pregnancy among the three groups. It's not statistically significant. Mothers of Down's infants reported the lowest rates of smoking, and non-affected controls had the highest rates of smoking. This is the alcohol characteristics by group. They were all about 60% on any alcohol use in the 3 months prior to pregnancy. Frequent drinking, non-affected controls were higher than the other two groups, but it was not statistically significant. Binge drinking among cases was highest. Cases were highest in binge drinking and binge drinking more than once. Neither of these were statistically significant either. In continued drinking, mothers of Down's infants 15.6%. That was statistically significant, but it's based on a very small N, and I'm not sure if it really means anything at this point. This is the adjusted odds ratios, and when I was changing my slides, the labels on the bottom got botched up. So this is using Downs as reference on the left and non-affected controls as the reference on the right. And as you can see, there's no significance for any alcohol use among when comparing cases to affected controls with Downs. However, there is a statistical difference when comparing Down cases to Downs on binge drinking and binge drinking more than once, with cases less likely to have mothers reporting either binge drinking or binge drinking more than once. When looking at non-affected controls, or the infants who were born without any apparent problems, there was no statistical difference in terms of any alcohol use or binge drinking. But when you got to binge drinking more than once, there is an odds ratio of 3.4 for cases being born to mothers who binge drink more than once. There also appears to be, even though these aren't statistically significant, there appears to be a dose response thing going on here. This chart is the odds ratios for exposure to binge drinking and binge drinking more than once among infants, comparing smoking and non-smoking mothers. And I guess these slides didn't come out. But over here would be, this is just the odds ratio for smoking, not considering drinking or anything like that. And it was not significant. There was no difference. And this is with non-affected controls as the reference group. So there was no difference between cases and non-affected controls on smoking prior to pregnancy. This is just a, this is binge drinking only, and there was no statistical significant difference there. This is non-smoking binge drinking and non-smoking binge drinking more than once. The odds ratios are elevated but not significant, with the confidence intervals overlapping one. When you get to mothers who smoked during pregnancy and binge drank, it's just significant and it's substantial. It's a 13.5 odds ratio among mothers who smoked and binge drank, and about a 10-point odds ratio for mothers who smoked and binge drank more than once. On the other measures, frequent drinking and any alcohol use, I didn't find anything. I didn't find those significant differences between any of the groups. The strengths and weaknesses of the study. The strengths are that this study, unlike the case control studies that were done before, employs multiple measures of alcohol exposure at two different time points in pregnancy. The sample size was adequate for the case non-affected control comparison. And it was representative, at least in terms of participating states during the study years. Limitations, of course, are self-reporting. There's misclassification. First of all, I was using birth certificates. Second of all, the cardiac defects were an aggregate aggregation of cardiac defects, so it's an homogeneous grouping of defects. The sample size may be inadequate for the case control comparison, for the case affected control comparison. And again, the generalization is limited since it was only eight states. My conclusions to this point are that any alcohol use and frequent drinking in the 3 months prior to pregnancy does not appear to be related to congenital heart defects in this study. However, infants with congenital heart defects appear to be at an increased risk of exposure to binge drinking, particularly binge drinking on multiple occasions in the 3 months prior to pregnancy compared to non-affected infants. There's also an increased risk of exposure to binge drinking and smoking among infants with congenital heart defects compared to both affected controls and infants with Down syndrome. I didn't show the interaction on the Down syndrome infants on that slide, but it was the same thing going on there. Among smoking mothers, there was substantial odds ratios. And there's a difference in self-report, and the role of recall and report bias remains an area for further study. The implications, of course, are that preconception and prenatal screening for alcohol use should include questions related to frequency and intensity of drinking, not just, are you drinking. There needs to be more education and prevention regarding binge drinking, particularly among women aged 24. One thing I failed to mention is that among pregnant and non-pregnant women 15 to 25 in that SAMHSA National Survey on Drug Use, they reported drinking, I think, an average of 3.6 drinks per occasion compared to women 26 to 44 who reported, I think, 1.7 drinks per occasion. And I also got to thinking about, I think the YRBS went to a four or more drink threshold for binge drinking in the last couple years, where they used to use five or more drinks for women. So I think that there's something going on there. Also, there needs to be a future research, and any future research using affected control groups, I think should carefully consider how to get an adequate sample size, because Downs doesn't appear to be an easy one to get at. My acknowledgments, I want to thank the CDC, and particularly the PRAMS program at CDC, the PRAMS working group, the participating states, Dr. Deborah Nelson, my advisor, Dr. Charlene Krollinger, the CDC MCH state epidemiologist for the state of Delaware. And I'd like to thank my employer, the Delaware Division of Public Health. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions?
Okay, we'll move on to our next speaker.